Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. Working Class on DeerCast, it's episode 112. It's actually the last episode of the series, which sounds sad, but I think it's a good thing, right? Not that it's ending, but like there's positive transition with DeerCast coming to partner. And I had to have Matt, Not Your Favorite Podcast, the host of Not Your Favorite Podcast, be my guest for the last episode. So thanks.
You son of a gun. It's the 100% Wild Podcast. One of these days, we're going to catch up to you guys.
Yeah. One of these days. You guys had to keep trying, you know. I just remember it's Not Your Favorite Podcast. I think that's what you guys call it.
Yeah, that's right. NYFOP, not Your Favorite Outdoor Podcast. That was a classic podcast phrase over here for us.
Yeah, thanks, Uncle Mark, right?
It's like I think that one was courtesy of Taylor.
Oh, was that a Taylor thing? I always thought it was
a Mark. That's all right, though.
We can blame it on Taylor, but I think, you know, that's fun to me. Like, it's a fake feud.
That's right. We have a good time with it. And actually, you know, behind the scenes, you know, we're trying to help each other out and drum up some future business and partnerships and all kinds of good stuff. So, and that's kind of where you were leading with your intro in regards to the Working Class on DeerCast and that transition. And, you know, what that's been running 2 years now, I feel like. Is that right?
Just a touch over 2 years. So,
and you guys in that time have absolutely exploded and busier than ever. And so a lot's changed, you know, in 2 years.
Yeah, it's been awesome. So I want to thank you for kind of letting us in the door of DeerCast and kind of letting us be the We'll Go Brother podcast to Not Your Favorite Podcast for the time. And then, but it's been awesome, man. We've met a ton of great people through Drury Outdoors, ton of good connections. And you're a major, major part of that. So I just want to give a big thank you to you first and foremost. So,
yeah, no, I appreciate you guys are working hard for us and getting the word out there on DeerCast. And that's really what the partnership was all about in the beginning. And since then, it's kind of grown into different levels. And I think, you know, the plan is this series is ending on DeerCast, but you know, we're going to continue a partnership over on the full Working Class podcast and be a partner with you on every level over there. So continuing to have that connection going forward.
Yeah. And I always felt like I wanted to give this full explanation on this episode. Cause I always felt like when I start to tell people like, we're ending the series and they're coming to partner. A lot of people are like, it's like, no, it's not a bad thing. Like, this is a good thing. It's just changes with growth. Like, it's good. So anyone out there that might think it's a bad thing, it's clearly not. So positive all around.
It frees you guys up to do more podcasts over in the Working Class side too, right? I mean, that's you know, as you continue to grow that brand, that's the goal on your side. So I think it works out in a lot of ways.
Yeah, definitely.
So that being said, you know, I appreciate everything. I still want to get you into the WCB studio. I want you to just come in and be able to relax and not do anything. Like, just come in and drink a beer and BS with us. That's what I want for you.
Hey, I would love that. I think it's going to have to be after deer season, though.
Oh, at this point, it's we'll do that then. So how is season going, man?
It's been full of ups and downs. I mean, we've had some great hunts and great opportunities. And, you know, my son Cameron killed his first whitetail, a nice buck over at my dad's farm. So that was an awesome experience. You know, killed a good deer during Missouri gun season on my farm. So that was cool. Scott's killed a couple good bucks. My camera guy, Scott, and the guy that helps me on all the farm management. So it's been good from that perspective. The downside's been I've had a couple odd things happen. Kansas early season, the muzzleloader season, hit a deer. Come to find out later, my scope got loose. I've had this gun and scope combo for probably 3-4 years and never had an issue. Shot it before I went out there, dead on. And I don't know if it was the roads out there or what, because it's really, really rough out there. You know, all those gravel roads, and it's just, you know, real bouncy, frankly. And I guess maybe it got loose and I didn't figure it out until I came back. But anyways, I hit a deer high and he completely falls over backwards and he gets up within 30 seconds, runs off. We, you know, trail him for days on end and he's still kicking. He's still out there running around. We get pictures of him every once in a while. So that was a kind of a bummer to start the season, just kind of a weird mishap, and just had some blown opportunities with archery in hand. And like I said, it's been a season full of ups and downs, but I'm on one right now and trying to finish out on a high note, and hopefully we will. So on back to my lease, I got a pretty good one we're chasing.
Well, awesome. Well, I hope you get them. I've been trying to like motivate people in this series, and a lot of people that are kind of dragging their ass a little bit, like, ah, man, I haven't had a good season. Like, it takes one sit to change it.
It does. And honestly, it's a game of, inches. Mark and Terry had always said that. And, you know, just a few inches left or a few inches right can make or break your season. And, you know, I think if you're at this point in the season, you're still grinding. One thing to keep in mind is don't get complacent. Keep shooting your bow, you know, keep practicing every time before you go out. Cause that, you know, it can change on a dime. And it could be the last minute of the evening's hunt, you know, the afternoon's hunt. Like, you just got to be ready. And as soon as you start kind of like letting that creep into your mind, like, you know, I haven't had anything happen for weeks on end. Like, that's the time it can happen. And you got to be ready for it.
Yeah, because if you let yourself slip mentally, you know, and physically with the shooting, then it's just going to, you're not going to close strong, and you got to close strong, you know.
The mental side is pretty And I know we've talked about it. I'm sure you guys have covered it on the podcast, on your podcast. I know we've covered it, but the mental side is interesting because it is by the end of the season, you're pretty well worn out. And, you know, you have pressures at home, you know, you've spent a lot of time away from your family or whatever obligations, you know, you're juggling all these things. And, it's like, you don't want to just be going through the motions, right? You still got to be mentally in check because of that one moment where it can all change.
Yeah. I think a lot of guys, kind of what I did, well, I killed a buck over Thanksgiving weekend, but a lot of guys, for the way it falls in Illinois, I would normally, if I'm getting frustrated and still have an open tag, unless I'm on like get a lead, you know, like I did, I kind of use that Thanksgiving break as kind of like a mental refresher if needed to kind of gear up for what's left of the season.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of things change after that, depending on the layout of your ground and stuff like that. So it's easy to get yourself down and kind of count yourself out before. And you still got quite a bit of season left.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in Illinois. So just trying to stay positive is tough. The mental game is worse than anything in hunting.
It is. And like I said, at this point in the season, we're having, you know, unseasonably warm temperatures, it's not really helping the general deer movement. I mean, they're, you know, we're in a good moon phase right now. We're, you know, getting ready to wax full, I think next Wednesday or Thursday. And so, you know, that you're getting some earlier movement, even though we got these warm temperatures. But like, you know, a couple of days ago we had extremely cold temperatures, and I'd say it's probably more the norm, the average temperatures, but it felt extremely cold based on where we've been at. And every deer moved, you know what I mean? And you just wish that things would line up where you could couple the good, you know, moon phase along with good temperatures and, you know, cloud cover wouldn't be there and all high pressure and all these things that we factor in on DeerCast. You wish they'd line up, but it really has not lined up often this season. I think the last weekend of October, it was like that. Yep. Like unbelievable, like everything lined up. And then it really just hasn't been, you know, you might get a little blip here and there, but overall it's been tough, man. It just hasn't lined up quite like we've needed it to.
But you bring up that weekend in late October. That goes down, and from I've been hunting, I don't know, a little over 20 years. From what I can remember, like the best 6-day span of hunting that I can remember. Like I talked about it on a podcast, you know, a couple episodes ago, we had 12 friends all kill deer in like a 6-day span.
Yeah, for sure. I think as we were leading into it, I kept saying on our podcast that was going to be the best period of the entire year, unless we saw extremely cold late season temperatures, which we're not getting. So I stand by it. Like it was the best period. And we had, you know, I think in one day we had like 6-7 people on, you know, the jury, like on the 13 cast that killed a deer. It's just crazy what all went down in a short, you know, window. And if you weren't out there, if you didn't have time off work or whatever, you missed, boy, you missed one of the best periods in the last several years.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I was telling guys like, listen, well, a lot of people like, you know, if you can look at DeerCast, it's telling you, it's like, dude, if you have a couple days of just PVD time that you can take 1 or 2 days, Thursday, Friday through the weekend, take 2 days, screw your rutcation that you take your continuous, like break it up if you can. And yeah, it turned out to just be stellar. So that'll go down as the best hunting weekend of all time until hopefully you get something again every season, but next season again too, you know.
It's just, I mean, you know, some people don't believe in it, but that moon phase lined up right in that period, the end of October, to where it made it just dynamite. Mm-hmm. And if we would have had the cold temperatures continue to last, or if say if we would have had the cold temperatures instead of the last week of October, that first week of November, that first week of November would have been the best period. But it just lined up where that evening, you know, the sun or the moon rather waxing full right there at the end of October and extremely cold temperatures. It was dynamite.
The moon is one of those things that for some reason, it's like, I feel like half the guys out there are like, nah, doesn't matter. And some guys are just die hard on it. And I only pay attention to it when DeerCast is like, it's going to be good. Or I hear, you know, Mark or Terry mention something like, but I don't like, I don't live and die by the moon.
Yeah.
I got buddies that bring it up. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going. Does that make sense? Like, I don't not believe it, but I'm not like the dude who's screaming first. Moon phase is number one from the rooftops, but
it's not number one. And actually in DeerCast in the algorithm, it's not even that much of a positive or negative attribute. It is a weight and it does affect it, but not like some people think, oh, the juries are all basing it off moon. It's not that. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think the issue is like you have people way smarter than you and I, the deer biologists and people that study this for a living, and their studies show it not having any effect. But if you really dive into those studies, I think they're flawed in some degrees as to maybe where they're taking place at or how exactly they're studying it. Like if it only, the collar's only, you know, ping every whatever it is, 15 meters or whatever. Like we, as an archery hunter or deer hunter in general, you're trying to get a deer, catch them as they're getting up from their bed and moving to the food source or moving to do whatever they're doing. You're trying to get as close as you can. So you're already within their, you know, within their, I think their scope or their little circle, so to speak.
Yeah.
So like those 15 yards, like that mean, or meters rather, that means a lot to a hunter. And so if just off a bedroom and they get up a little bit earlier and they move that distance, it may not have triggered on those collars, you know, cause it's not a big distance, but for you and I, it is a big distance. So we've had I think it was a Dr. Strickland. I forget who it was that we had on the podcast, and great guy, knows more than I'll ever know, obviously, in relation to the deer and behaviors and all that stuff. But he explained that to us. It was like, it was kind of a light bulb moment. It's like, it seems like it's a little flawed then. Yeah, and so anyways, you have people like that, that push out their studies, which they should be, you know, it's great. It's cool. It's interesting stuff, but it then becomes a narrative of, oh, moon doesn't affect deer movement. And I've been here at Drury Outdoors. I'm 42. I started full time at whatever, 2021. And I've noticed that our team over the 20 year period, those 10 days around the full moon, the first, you know, the five leading in, the five preceding, that's when we kill the most deer on the team.
That's all you need to see right there. I mean,
50 guys, you know, 50 or 60 guys over 20 years and over 120 deer a year average. This isn't scientific because they would have to hunt like Mark and Terry. They'd have to hunt every day for 4 months to be probably a true study.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, variables would have to line up to be similar. But in general, it shows me that, you know what, deer move differently during that period.
Yeah. I think, that's all you need. Like, that's what directly affects you and your hunting and the people around you. And that's what really, you think about it, there was no deer cast, if there was no deer biologists, if you could put that together, you 100% would be like, oh yeah, the moon's like a major thing, you know, what I mean, or whatever.
Yeah, well, and real world example, I'm hunting a lease that I've had for 3 years now, and this particular piece, the deer had, before the current landowner bought it 3 years ago, the previous owner had like 20 people hunting it during gun season, and they just
slaughtered it, you know,
slaughtered it. And so these deer will not come out, and it's got one big giant open field, ag field on it, and deer won't come out until right at dark. Mm-hmm. And what we have noticed over 3 years, and this is a non-scientific study, is that when we are around the full moon, we see deer pop out earlier than we do when it's not the full moon. If you line that up with cool temperatures, boy, look out. And so like right now we're in one of those periods, and we've been hunting the last 3 or 4 days. And like I said, I'm trying to catch up with a good one. We have a couple different shooters, and what that keep popping out on this one particular field we're hunting. And those deer, based on the camera study over the last 3 years, because one of them's a 6.5-year-old, and I've known him since we've started hunting this farm. And that deer,
the first 3 years of his life in the previous owner's pressure or leasing pressure.
Correct. Yeah. And I have noticed that this deer will not step out unless the conditions are just primed, right? Well, last couple nights he's been out early. The moon's rising at 12 p.m., you know, 12:30 p.m., whatever. He's coming out just a little bit earlier. Last night conditions sucked. It wasn't a great deer cast night, but he came out like a couple minutes right before dark. Well, if the temperatures would have been a little bit cooler the night before when it was cooler, the deer was out an hour before dark. You know what I mean? This is a deer that will not move unless it's dark out.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I liken it to, it directly correlates to that moon phase. And the only way I know that is because we've tracked this deer for 3 years now, and those are his habits. And in general, all the habits of the deer out there. So I don't know.
That's super interesting, but it's like right there. That's what, you know, it's directly affecting you and the deer you're hunting and your situation. I'm curious with that, you know, people that argue like pressure, you know, like that right there, that deer hasn't had that type of pressure in over three years.
3 years. Yeah.
And he still held on to that habit from pressure.
All the shooters out there do too. It's not
wild.
Now the younger deer there, we got this crazy, he's probably 4 this year, and it's just crazy. He looks like he's a Texas buck. He's super wide. It's like a 7-point, just a really interesting deer that we've been passing from an age standpoint, but next year I think he's going to be actually something real, like a real cool special deer, just because the width and the mass it'll put on. But that deer walks around like nobody's business. Like, he doesn't have any care in the world. And this is a deer that was, you know,
a fawn
that last year those guys were hunting it.
And he really interesting.
Like, there's no care in the world. Like, he owns the place.
See, that's really interesting to me. Cause like, I don't know. Like, I try not to pressure any ground I hunt. That way the hunting stays good into the late season. And I get a lot of guys like, you're not guys that I hunt with directly, cause they all get it. You know, they're all on the similar program, but some people that aren't on the same program, like, dude, it's not that big a deal. Like, you're thinking about it too much. I'm like, I don't think I am. I'd rather err on the side of caution than not. And that's like a perfect example of it.
I think even like this particular farm, it still has some intrusion. It's got an easement on it, and it still has some intrusion. So, for instance, an elderly couple lived at the back end of the farm, like past the farm on this easement, and they would drive every night. They would drive by every night at like dark 30, you know, right before the 30 minutes when all the deer are supposed to move. They drive
right
by.
When you don't want them to drive by. Yeah. Right.
So unfortunately in the off season, the gentleman, he passed away. And so the widow sold the house, and there's nobody back there this year. And here's another, this is just non-scientific, looking at like the last 2 years versus this year. This year, the side of the farm that easement's on, it's unbelievable the amount of deer and movement we have on that side now. And it's all because they don't have someone driving through. They don't have intrusion. And people say like, oh, they get used to a farmer. They get used to equipment. They get used to this and that. Well, that elderly couple had probably done that every day for 20 years or whatever it was. So certainly you would say the deer would be used to that. That shouldn't bother them.
Yeah.
Bullshit. Every time they did that, and we were in stand on a lot of them, deer, as soon as they hear the gravel popping, you know, hell out of there. And that vehicle meant no harm to those deer, but it affected them. It was intrusion. Yeah. And this year it's been totally different. It's been awesome, frankly. So,
I can make a joke, but I'm not going to make it. I was going to go dark with it, but I won't. I'll spare you.
I said, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. I was like, well, you know, they're old.
It's trying to be nice.
Yeah. That's my dark humor, but yeah, like you go about thinking it like that. Oh, the deer are used to that. Oh, like I know a guy who hunts a spot. He kills deer there every now and again, but the old man like cross country skis through the timber, and I watch and I love him, and he listens to every podcast. He's a great friend. And I'm just like, man, I would do anything I could to find another piece rather than deal with just like that old dude skiing underneath me. Like that would just drive me so nuts.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You can't do anything about it either. Especially that's the only place to hunt. It's like, oh my God, it's like, well, what am I going to do?
Pressure is always a really interesting topic. I love those examples you have because it's like it proves the naysayers wrong. Like it's not a big deal. It doesn't matter if you drive down there every day. Now, if they drove down once a week, it'd probably be significantly less impactful on them. Like when I mow a farm through some CRP, like burn strips and the perimeter of another farm on my tractor 4 times a summer, probably doesn't mess with them.
Yeah.
Now, if I went on a joyride in my tractor every afternoon,
yeah,
probably would change things, you know?
In fact, in that instance, you talk about it, it's like sometimes that movement or intrusion, in that case, like you come in with your tractor and you're brush hogging something, like sometimes that curiosity will actually make deer move. We've seen that a bunch of times where Scott will go up and he'll move a blind or he'll do something. And then we'll have pictures on our trail camera of a deer coming out about an hour later, looking to see what, you know, shooter or whatever, looking to see what was going on out there. So, you know, you do have those types of instances, but in general, one more part to this, on that same piece we've been using this year, like in years past, I would take a, you know, electric side by side or, you know, just regular side by side or whatever. And we'd go, or even my truck to like halfway and we'd park and then walk to our spot.
Mm-hmm.
This year I've been just exclusively on this piece using an e-bike, these Rogue Ridge bikes, which I know you've messed with those before as well. And so we're riding in right to our spot. We're not leaving that scent trail that we had been in years past.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting in quick, we're getting in quiet. And even our exit strategy, like, you know, we're blowing probably 20, 30 deer off the field, you know, between the front to the back to the front of the property, but it's so quiet and it's so quick. Like we do it with the headlamps off. Like we just do it kind of incognito. And man, I really don't think it bothers them one bit. And I will say, like, this year we've had much better luck when we've gone out to this farm, seeing deer, seeing them in daylight. Like, I think there's something to that piece of it and how we're accessing our spots and going closer and not leaving a scent trail with our boots. You know, like, I think even that's left a big impression.
I am the biggest e-bike fan, and there's a lot of people that don't get it until you have an experience like what you're having. Cause a lot of it's hard to justify buying one.
Yeah. They're expensive.
Four wheeler for the same price, you know, a used one.
Yeah.
And I get it, but damn, if you care about pressure on deer, I have zipped by deer and it's like, what was that? But kind of like, I don't know. It's crazy. I've zipped by deer, watch a buck stand up in some CRP grass. If you keep on cruising, it's just different. I don't know. It's a magic carpet.
It is. It's interesting. And I mean, it's, we've had them for a couple of years and I've used it here and there, but this year I just said, you know what? I just felt like we needed to quit using the side-by-sides or the EVs or whatever on this farm. Just because the other thing is this big wide open field. Like it's hard to find somewhere to stash it. Mm-hmm. Whereas like the bikes, we literally ride them to the spots and lay them over, maybe throw a little bit of brush or a leaf on it. And it's just invisible. Like they don't even pay attention to it. We've had them come up, sniff them and look at them and they don't spook on them. Whereas you got some sort of four-wheeler, ATV, UTV, whatever, like they do not like that. You know, it's some big box, you know, kind of out of nowhere in their little terrain.
So I was kind of wondering about that a little bit. I always took like burlap and would like lay it over it or just get it to a spot where, you know, I've had deer come up. I sprayed mine now with nose jammer. I don't know if it made a difference or not, but whatever. But I have a box blind I put on a gravity wagon. And so it's got wheels, it's metal, it's ugly, but it's farm equipment. And it just sits up there in the field. And I rode my e-bike to it and I just leaned it against the wagon. Yeah. And looking at it, I'm like, I don't know if they're going to care about this. It's, so does it look different because my e-bike's leaned up against a gravity wagon or should I have tucked it 30 yards away somewhere? You know, it's like, where do they care and not care when it comes to that? So
I don't know. I thought a lot about that as well, because a lot of we use a lot of those Keen trailers where like our box blinds will be, you could pop them up on those trailers or whatever. And I've been wanting to put it underneath the trailer because there's room there by the tongue, just stash it there. And I haven't done it yet, but I think if I had, say if I had a couple cedar branches or something, or like you're saying burlap, like I wouldn't think twice to do stash it right there and flat and lay that over the top. I don't think they would mess with it at all or care. Yeah,
I'm going to figure that out this year. I'm going to get a new Rogue Ridge bike. I had the 750. I'm upgrading to 1,000.
I'm
hard on them. And I told them, I'm like, I'm going to try and break it. And I've had the other one for years and it's been a workhorse.
Yeah, I've full disclosure, they are a partner of ours. And I've had a few flats on the smaller one. And then these guys in here, Tim and Scott and these guys got better tubes, I think. I forget what the Gator tube or something like that. And they got better tubes. And we haven't really had the issue since then. The two differences, because I got a 750 in Bottomland and then I got the 1,000. Because Scott's on one, I'm on one.
Yeah.
And the difference that I felt like I've noticed between the two, I feel like the 750, I like it from it's small and it's easy to stash anywhere. And you know, I like it from that perspective. And Bottomland's cool and it folds up, also cool.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's a little bit rougher because it's lower to the ground. The 1,000, it rides a little bit smoother, but it's also got those bigger tires on it.
Yeah.
But I've also wrecked that one a couple times. You gotta watch out on gravel.
Yeah, gravel's tough. And then I kind of have a hack. I leave it in the middle gear and I don't shift like a mountain bike gear on it. I just leave it in the center gear and I just run it like that.
Yeah, I don't shift it at all. I just leave it on and I don't even know what gear mine's on. But I will say this farm I'm on is relatively flat. Like if I were going up hills and stuff, it'd probably be a different story.
Yeah. They're a tool that it's something I want to do more dedicated podcasts on, is just like e-bikes and the benefits and stuff, because there's a lot I thought they might benefit me, but I didn't realize it until I got one.
Yeah.
Like, it's a game changer. Like I rarely hunt not using one.
Yeah. Yeah. They're pretty handy. I love them.
I love them. It's an investment, but it's worth it. So if you got to talk your wife into it, I get it. It's hard. It's a hard sell, but
$3,500 for a bike. It's like, that's
a lot. Well, we'll go to the campground, man, and I'll put one of those like little kid chariots. So you put your kids in, it's got like the netting. Yeah. And I'll put my kids in that and hook it up to that thing and rip around the campground. And they love it.
Yeah. They're pretty awesome. Like I wouldn't have thought I loved it as much as I do.
Yeah. It's just one of them things. Hey, one other thing I want to talk about real quick before we get out of here, you know, your son's killing deer now.
Yeah.
Is this double the taxidermy for the house, or like what's the deal that you got to work out there? Cause I know there's a conversation that had to have went down, right?
Yeah. So for the most part, I asked him, and it wasn't like a giant or anything. Like I see some of these kids that are killing like giant deer for their first deer. And I'm always thinking, man, you got ruined, you know, like,
yeah.
My son had no expectation of what he wanted to shoot. And so when we went up to dad's, really, it was, I let him dictate it and whatever got him excited. And dad and I are on the same page about that too. It's like, hey, you know, like a good, I don't care if he was a freaking spike. I really didn't care. Whatever he wanted to shoot, we're in for. And yeah. So we had this good, you know, year and a half or whatever, I don't know, 2-year-old, whatever it was, 8-point come out. And he was so excited. And he, even after the fact, he's like, man, that deer, that was a big deer, wasn't it? That was a big deer. And I'm like, yeah, buddy, that was a huge deer. So anyways, I asked him what he wanted. I was like, do you want me to cut the antlers off and put it on, you know, a piece of board, or do you want to do a skull, or do you want a full shoulder or whatever? And he likes the skull look, you know, likes a euro, which I'm like, hey, I'm all about that. Yeah. So that's what I do most of mine is. And I got a wall of euros in my office here. And so I haven't had to, I know a guy, Dan Burnett, that locally, that's a friend that does all my euros for me. So it's pretty, pretty painless as far as the pocketbook goes. But if he killed a big deer, like, and he wanted, I don't care, 120, whatever he wanted, and he said, I want a shoulder mount, of course we'd have to go in and do it. I'd be all for it and just suck it up.
Yeah, you got to do it. I mean, especially just the first few. I'm getting into like having that conversation with our crew. You know, our buddy Austin, his son shot his first buck, and they're, you know, a good buck for, you know, I don't know how old he is, 8, 9, I don't know. I forget.
Dan Potts reaction.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good clip, man.
That kid came in. I was worried about getting him to talk.
Yeah.
And he came in just so confident and just witty. I'm like, yeah, this is awesome. You know,
it's awesome.
Yeah. They're shoulder mounting that buck. And, you know, he's a pro. He's a legend in his own mind already, which is hilarious, you know, talking to him. But I'm excited for those days if my kids get into it. But I just know the taxidermy thing, it starts doubling up fast. Like it did with my dad and I, you know, I got my first buck mounted right here, and it's like, that was really nice of my dad to mount that, you know?
Yeah. Same. I'm looking at my first one as well. And it's one of those things, like, you know, it's costly, but in the scheme of things, like, I killed that deer when I was 15 or 16, and I still am looking at it. I don't know how old you were, you know, where
yeah, about
you,
the same 14-ish. Yeah.
So it's like, hey, you got it forever. It's a great memory. So no, yeah. I can't complain about that. I got my money's worth out of it.
Yeah. It's still around. It's been a long time. Yeah. And it looks all right still, you know what I mean?
That's right. So, a little dusty.
It's cool. I like to bring that up. I'm a taxidermy nerd. We just have a bunch at the studio and the collection's growing. So I always bring up taxidermy stuff. I brought a question up. It was a couple of years ago at ATA show with the Lindsays. And I said, this is kind of a weird thing to bring up, but hear me out. When you die, what happens with all your taxidermy? Maybe I brought that up to you as well during one conversation.
Uh-uh.
I know they have a lot of shoulder mounts, and they're like, oh, man, I never thought about that. I'm like, yeah, hopefully, I mean, their kids are into hunting, but what a burden for somebody who doesn't care.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. And those are the ones that you go to somebody's, like, yard sale, and then he's like, damn, they're getting rid of all dad's deer mounts. And it's like, nobody cares about that deer but you. Is the reality of it. Now, your son, or if there's something special, if there's some, you know, heritage there or ties, like, that's one thing. But when you have the amount of deer, like, I think even Mark or Terry, I think Mark said it before, like, he would like to donate his, you know, Bass Pro or Cabela's or whatever to be utilized, like, some big deer mounts.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you think of, like, I can't imagine how many 140 to 150 inch caliber deer that they've killed over the year between the two of them. And, you know, Bass Pro and Cabela's aren't taking those deer. So what do you do with all of them?
End up in a tavern one day or that's something. Right. I'd be cool with that. You know, a bunch of dudes drinking Cold Busch Light looking like, where'd that deer come from? Yeah, yeah. I can live with that.
I don't know if they want all my 3-year-old Euro mounts, but I got a handful of those.
Yeah. Same. I do too, you know, but I don't know. It's something I always think about because, you know, when my dad passed away, it's like, of course, I'm going to hang in the studio and honor him. And, like, you know, and it's either important to me.
Correct.
If my kids aren't into him, man, I have so much adding up, and I hopefully have another 4 years of deer hunting. I'm just going to get a little pickier or just will them to, like, a Cracker Barrel or something.
The Cracker Barrel mount, those, they could use some help because all those are pretty rough.
Yeah.
We just did a podcast not long ago about DIY Euro mounts. And I was surprised over on YouTube, on the Drury Outdoors YouTube channel, there was a few guys that were going back and forth about like almost how it was disrespectful to do the Euro mounts on some of these deer. And I'm like, man, I don't see it. Like even my wife likes the Euro mounts. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's a cool look and it's pretty popular at this point. We have Euro mounts all over the studio.
Yeah.
And I don't get why someone would be so passionate about what you like. If I looked at you and said you had a 150 inch deer that you Euro mounted,
yeah,
you know, I'd be like, oh, you, what a shame you did that to that deer. It's like, what the hell do I care what you do to that deer? It's your deer.
They'd just rather see all those deer. So where is the line of respect? And like, is it like 130, everything over 130, you got to show it respect? Anything other, you got to don't show it respect and just Euro it?
I don't know, because I tried to say to the guy, like, I actually like the way it looks. Second of all, like, it does help with the pocketbook. Like, if you're not Euro mounting, like on a typical year, kill two or three good bucks.
Yeah.
And like, that's, what are you looking at? A couple grand, that $1,500 to a couple grand there. And yeah, like, okay, so if I could Euro mount them for $100 each,
yeah,
that's quite a swing.
So, yeah, but they are classic. They're a good look. You know, I know guys that just don't like the look of shoulder mounts. They want to Euro everything. Like, yeah, big deer. Like 60s, 70s types bucks. And I'm kind of like, I'd shoulder mount those, but
we have a couple of Mark's deadheads that they found, you know, in shed season or whatever, and they got salvage tags for, that we have Euro mounts for, like big deer.
Yeah.
And they look awesome. Like, so I don't know, man. Like, for me, I think the cutoff is in that like 50s range. That's me personally. I wouldn't have said that, you know, I wouldn't have said that 10 years ago, but
right,
currently that's kind of where I'm at. Like, hey, mid 50s, you know, and up, I'd probably go shoulder mount, which, yeah, I haven't killed any of those lately. So,
well
I got a lot money. Of euros. I've saved a lot of money, let me tell you.
See, that's all right. Yeah. I love it, man. We're getting to the point where I'm like, ugh, you know, like, luckily I have the studio because my house is full. And I can put all the new ones here. And we bought the neighboring building and are like trying to renovate it. Trying, yeah, is the key word there. And then, so we have more room now than ever. We have all our African animals coming in. And Eric shot a giraffe in Africa. And we shouldered a giraffe. So
you had to buy the building next to you just to put that thing up.
Honestly, I mean, it was too good of a deal. Actually, the building cost us less than the giraffe mount to buy the building. So kind of made sense, but yeah, man, like, how stupid is that? We shoulder mounted a giraffe.
Well, I mean, it is a hell of an experience, I guess. You know, it's one of those things where if you don't, you never know when you'll get back or whatnot, which I know you guys you've gone the last couple of years, but you never know when you might be your last chance. So I kind of see it.
What Cracker Barrel is going to want a giraffe, Matt?
None. That's canceled Cracker. I don't know any place that can restaurant that can take a draft these days.
Yeah, hopefully Shields will want it or something when they're dead and gone. But dude, I enjoyed the conversation, man. Go kill a deer this afternoon, and I appreciate everything you've done for us over the last couple of years with this Working Class on DeerCast series, man. It's been awesome, and hopefully you still talk to me after this episode, and I can still come down from time to time and record with you guys.
Well, we're going to see you over at ATA and drink a beer, I think. So we got, yep, at least something coming up in the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks or so. So
yeah,
no,
yeah,
we appreciate you guys and you know, all the help you've given us as far as like spreading the message on DeerCast and the good word. And I think we got plenty of years of partnership to come, just a different look. So we're, yep, looking forward to it. And thank you guys.
Yeah, man. Thank you. Hey, plug your podcast once so I don't feel like such an a-hole from the opening comments.
Well, listen, we have it will be not your favorite outdoor podcast, but we like to play in the same arena as Kurt and the boys at Working Class.
Yeah.
But we call ours the Drury Outdoors 100% Wild Podcast. And you know what? We got a little, you know, I'm in the Working Class Facebook group. Love it. We got a Facebook group. Yeah, I love it. Now, I don't comment much because I have a feeling like I could get killed in the comment section. So I'm one of those creepers that just like to keep in touch with what everybody's saying. But
yeah,
we have a Facebook group too for the 100% Wild podcast called The Rack Pack, and you're in it, and and like yours, like it's a good place to shoot the shit, good camaraderie, show your deer if you kill one, your turkey, whatever it may be, get some good advice. So come on over and jump in if you want to. But no, we appreciate it, and I love the back and forth banter between the two podcasts.
Well, we've been talking about it for the whole time we've been doing Working Class on DeerCast. We actually do need to box out time this summer, like July sometime, and get you guys here.
Let's do it.
And we'll just BS, man. I just want you to come in and not to worry about nothing. Have a beer. Don't worry about any production stuff, anything. You're just here to talk. That's it.
Great. That'd be different for me, man.
Yeah. That's why I want to see you in that atmosphere, you know, because every time I'm there, I'm that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's, just like, it's nice, isn't it? Nice change of pace to come to somebody else's podcast and not have to worry about it.
It's great. I love it, too. So I want to return that treatment for you. So,
all right. Deal, man. We'll make it happen.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for watching and listening to this series. We're not going anywhere. We're just cussing a little more twice a week instead of once a week. That's
my kind of podcast.
Yeah, that's right. So you know what to do, everyone. Go shoot a giant. Thanks for supporting us, and we'll catch you next week. We're doubling down on regular WCB content. It's going to get scary. Good luck if you still have an open tag. Go kill one, Matt.
I will, man. I'll keep you posted. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for everything.
Thanks, buddy.
You want to succeed, you want to fish, you want to be one of the greatest.
Tune in to West Marine's Life on the Water, presented by Costa Custom Boats, every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.